afternoon, and welcome to the pre-Christmas episode of We the People Radio. Just in case we air this at a different time and you're going, what's with the Christmas music? It's December 19th. So we don't know what you're doing, where you are, but we hope it's going well for you and that you're ignoring all the hysteria about the Rona. And,
yeah, it's a lot of bah humbug there.
A lot of Rona madness, although I am noticing in our area that the mask mandate is just roundly being ignored. And you know what's interesting? I don't see people dropping over.
No.
So that's good. I shouldn't joke about it. Probably some people have. Sorry about that if your people did. I think we all lost some people this last year. There was a lot of that going on for a variety of reasons. Let's see. So, Bill, what do you have for us today?
We have a sponsor.
Well, do tell.
We don't have a sponsor, but our sponsor this hour.
We have the one we like to talk about. How's that?
We have
one we like to promote. We have all these other people who chip in, which is really cool. And they do that through the website.
Yeah. So our sponsor is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. And Pape has everything to do with John Deere. If you need a tractor, a mower, an implement, parts, service, give them a call. 226-9226. They also have Honda power products and Steel power products. You can go up there. They have a fairly good inventory of both. It's got generators, mowers, weed whackers. What'd they call them over in Europe?
Whippersnippers.
Whippersnippers,
we learned that last week.
Yeah, that's
you want to cut your weeds in Australia, you're going to have to buy yourself a whippersnipper.
A whippersnipper, yeah. And they do have those in stock as well. So give them a call or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
There you go.
And if you missed the show about the whippersnipper, it really wasn't about the whippersnipper. It was about how cannabis in all forms basically takes a whippersnipper to your chromosomes. So we joke, but it was not necessarily a laughing matter. And that was 2 weeks ago here in December, and that was with Dr. Stuart Reese. Very interesting. You should tell a friend. So if you have people that are still thinking that, you know, CBD and that kind of non-THC forms of cannabis are good and aren't going to hurt you, they're still going to give you cancer and all sorts of other stuff. And there's apparently quite a body of science about that that we have been,
not reporting
it's just
on.
Been hidden.
Just, yeah.
Yeah. Just, yeah. I looked at the dates on a lot of those reports. It was like 2018, 2019, 2015. Thinking, really? You pay pretty close attention.
Well,
where the heck is all that?
You start advertising all that stuff and, you know, it's going to cut way back on their tax base. So, not really, because I guess
not really, because it's all being grown by cartels out here.
Yeah,
so
nobody's paying the taxes.
It's going to hurt the cartels.
Yeah, so why don't you go ahead and
report on it?
Wouldn't
want to do that. So first hour, we're going to go to Ohio today. Not going to go to Australia, sorry. No, well, I don't know if Mark has an accent. He might have an accent.
Yeah, watch out.
So far, no accent. He is a Senate candidate for the state of Ohio, running to fill a vacancy. We'll let him tell us all about that. His name, easy for me to say, is Mark Pokita. He is a successful entrepreneur who has embodied hard work, done right, his entire life. In 1996, he started a company, Fast Switch, with only $1,000. It's kind of just that story, you know. I do want to hear more about that. That small investment created thousands of good-paying jobs. He earned his success. And he will again. His life is a testimony to the value of focus and accomplishment. He's the American dream, and he's mad as hell that the rudderless government and a chaotic culture are now blocking honest citizens from living their American dream. And amen to that.
Amen.
Isn't that the truth? He grew up on the East Coast and moved to Ohio in 1976. He has a degree with honors from The Ohio State University. Mark lives in Dublin, Ohio, and is a proud grandparent to two grandsons and wants Ohio families to be proud to raise their children and grandchildren here. And I'll spell his last name for you in case you want to look him up. It's P, like Paul, U-K-I-T-A. So his assistant told me it's like Chiquita with a P. And I was like, oh, thanks for that. I'll always remember that. Mark, so how's it going in Ohio today?
It's going well. Thanks for having me, Erin.
Yeah, sure. And tell me this. Where'd you grow up on the East Coast?
So my dad worked for IBM during a time where those three initials stood for I'm being moved.
Yeah, so my dad worked for Travelers, which meant you were going to.
Yeah. Yeah, you were going to travel, right? I wanted to come on with a mate when you were talking about the whippersnapper thing, but it didn't do that. So it was upstate New York, New Jersey, Maryland, up and down the East Coast multiple times, and I ended up in high school in Poughkeepsie, New York. So there really is a Poughkeepsie, New York.
Yeah, see, and I grew up in West Hartford. We moved from Seattle because we worked for Travelers, of course, and moved to the home office in Hartford. And then I left and moved back. We all moved back out here because he stopped working for Travelers but still switched coasts, I guess. And we did that in like 77, 78, something like that. So we've been traveling similar roads.
Yeah, West Hartford's a really nice kind of gentrified area now. I don't know if you've been back there, but it's they've done a really job.
Yeah, our house is still white with black shutters and a red door because it's considered socially inappropriate to make any kind of change.
Right.
You're not actually allowed to do that.
Yeah, I didn't suggest that there weren't social justice warriors there, but they've done a good job of kind of cleaning things up, so that's good.
Yeah, West Hartford was a fun place to grow up, and considering that it was a suburb of a big city, the only thing was we'd see two kids coming from downtown on one bike, and you knew they were leaving on two bikes. That was our initiation to crime.
Nice.
And it was true every time, too. We'd be like, look out, two kids on a bike. So everybody'd have to grab their bikes and make sure that they were safe. Otherwise, they were going to be taken downtown.
Unbelievable.
So I know, some things never change. Okay, so Fast Switch, tell us that. That's a technology company.
Yeah, so Fast Switch is an IT staffing company.
Okay.
That I started in 1996 and grew for 20 plus years and sold at the end of 2019. At the time I sold it, it was about $100 million in revenue annually, about 800 employees, but over 20 years, we employed thousands of people. So I got to see firsthand how the government can keep small businesses from prospering, and I think we're seeing right now an absolutely orchestrated attempt to take out small businesses because small business people are the furthest thing from being dependent on the government.
Yep.
And Brandon does not want us to be independent of the government.
No, because you could take $1,000 and go make something else.
Right. Yeah. So, that's the company. I sold it to my two key managers, and they chose to split the company up kind of half and half. And those two companies that it became are prospering. And it's, you know, it's the American dream. It's I live the American dream. I am proud to say that I, in my company, created 5 or 6 millionaires. That's one of the greatest accomplishments that I think I could do. And these were people from humble backgrounds, as I was. And I'm just, the reason I'm running for the U.S. Senate, you didn't ask me, but the reason I'm running for the U.S. Senate is because I do not believe that my grandchildren will have the same opportunity to live the American dream that I did. And I know that sounds trite. There are a lot of candidates out there that talk about this, but listen, my grandfathers were coal miners. In Scranton, Pennsylvania. My parents had outhouses when they were kids. I grew up in a lower middle class family. I mean, I've got the receipts to show that a lower middle class kid, keeping your nose clean and doing all the things that we were told as kids we should do, if you do them and be successful, that was how it was supposed to work. Now people are telling us that we're bigots, we're racists, and we're wrong, and that's just unacceptable to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you're right. And your current senator, I didn't do any homework on that, but how long has he been there?
Rob Portman.
Yeah, he's kind of, yeah. You just don't ever hear about him, and I realize there are 100 of them, and, you know, to be fair, not everybody, you know, captures the limelight unless they do something bad. But, so he's not running, and what, like, kinds of stuff would you change or do differently?
Yeah. Virtually everything. Rob Portman is a career politician. He is a what I would call a swamp rhino. For example, he was all for the quote-unquote bipartisan infrastructure bill. Rob grew up with a silver spoon in his mouth, went to an Ivy League school, went to Michigan Law School, practiced law for a couple, 3 years, and then went right into politics and has been there ever since. And he realized, you know, a year or so ago that there's no way Ohioans are going to reelect him, so he quit. He's quitting. He's not retiring. He's quitting. And it's because he's just been ineffective. He hasn't done a single thing Ohioans sent him to do. He's not a conservative. We're a state that is trending more and more red, and Rob is trending more and more blue. And I think that's, I know, I got in this race to primary him because of that back in October of 2019. I'm the only candidate of literally a football team-sized field right now who was willing to stand up and primary a sitting U.S. senator with the kind of money and clout Portman has. Everybody else got in, as my campaign team likes to say, everybody else got in after it was cool. It wasn't cool within the Ohio Republican Party or the Republican Party in general to be primarying a sitting U.S. senator. But I believe these are the kind of things, Aaron and Bill, these are the kind of things that we have to do. Mm-hmm. It's not like I really want to do this in the sense that this was not on my bucket list. I mean, you can go back and look at my social media, anything. There isn't a single person in the world that would tell you, oh, yeah, Mark has always had his eye on being a candidate for something. The only thing I've had my eye on being a candidate for is grandparents. That's it. Right?
And you're elected.
yeah, exactly. And that happened. And I feel incredible about that. But I am not feeling good about the future of the country. Not at all.
Now, are you being supported by the Republican Party in Ohio?
Oh, not at all.
Okay.
Right? Because I'm an outsider and they're insiders. And that's a great question because that's a segue into the one of the mantras of my campaign. I decided if we're going to run, we're just not going to run to get me elected. This is bigger than me. This is saving the Republic kind of effort. And so along the way, in trying to get elected, we're also trying to leave Ohio better. And part of that is exposing the extreme corruption in the Ohio Republican Party. And it is terrible here. We are arguably the most corrupt state Republican Party in the nation. We are I'm sure you've all heard about the First Energy Larry Householder, $61 million fraud, you know, having to do with primary elections. The FBI, people have been indicted. It took the FBI to get engaged in that.
Wow.
But we've got a laundry list of corruption in Ohio, and it goes back to right to the Ohio Republican Party. We've got a $2 million accounting irregularity that Bob Paduchek, the chairman of the party, and Dave Johnson, the treasurer of the party, refused to have audited by an outside audit firm, even though the Ohio Republican Party bylaws call for an audit every year. And it's been 16 years since the books have been audited.
Well, that ought to tell you something.
Wow, nothing to see here.
Yeah, grassroots Republicans deserve to see where that money was going. I'm not suggesting people put it in their pockets. But I think it went to campaigns of people that Ohio grassroots America First conservative Republicans would be shocked and stunned. And so we're just pushing on that. And I'm doing it to show how vigorously I will fight and work for Ohioans when I get to Washington. Because my other competitors are silent on this topic. And if they are silent because they're afraid of the Ohio Republican Party, or they think that this is okay, then I have news for them. Grassroots, conservative, America First Republicans are not happy with this. And it is a key differentiator for me from everybody else in the race.
So if you are elected, would you have the power to make any changes on that front? And if so, what would you do?
Well, I think, I mean, that's a good question because, you know, as you started, I think Aaron said, you know, you don't hear about every senator because there are 100 of them, and you don't hear about every House, you know, representative because
sure.
there are 435 of them. And what I've said is I can't do this alone. So what I envision is an America First caucus in Washington made up of citizen candidates like me, people who have never run for office before, are doing it to go serve and not prosper, want to make change, and quite frankly are really angry about what's going on. I think that the number, if we can get 15 to 25 of those people across both chambers in Washington, we can affect this kind of change and drive it into our states with the proper governors and legislatures elected in those states. So, for example, in Ohio, what I would foresee is a new governor. Mike DeWine is our current governor. He's running for re-election. He deserves to be investigated, not re-elected. His hands are all over this First Energy deal. So I would expect that we would have a more conservative America First governor in place when I get to Washington. And we have people here who are fed up with a feckless, cowardly Ohio legislature that is all at the end of the leash that Mike DeWine holds. So I expect that there's going to be lots of turnover, and I would be working with them to do things like this, Bill.
Okay, hold that thought, Mark. I don't want to
go ahead.
Break you midstream, but we've got to take a quick break and thank our sponsors, play a little Christmas music, come right back. That's pretty
Great.
Much the order of things.
Great.
You're listening to We the People. You can find everything about the show, including archives of all of our programs going back like 11 years at wethepeopleradio.us. Oh, sorry, Bill.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay.
Make the Yuletide gay.
From now on, our troubles will be miles away. Here we are as in olden days, happy golden days of yore.
Said the shepherd boy to the mighty king, do you know what I know? In your palace warm, mighty king, do you know what I know? A child, shivers in the cold. Let us bring him silver and gold. Let us bring him silver and gold.
Frank, a little Bing. Very Christmassy. Okay, Mark, sorry. Back on track.
No worries. So working hand-in-hand, I think, with a governor and a legislature that's of the right ilk, we can do things like nullify unconstitutional dictates from the federal government to Ohio and other states. Just basically say we're not going to adhere to them, like some states have done with illegal immigration placements and things like that. And also unfunded mandates, things of that nature. So that's the way I believe a senator working as an advocate for his or her state can help that state in D.C. And then on top of that, I'm a real small government, we've got to cut spending candidate. We're
finally
printing money like Venezuela,
yep.
Right? And we're monetizing the debt, and everybody's 401k is going to be worthless. I mean, it may be you know, 6 or 7 digits, but it'll be worthless, and we've got to stop it. We just have to stop it. So I think that's the way we can work. But in Washington, working together with 15 to 25 other America First kind of folks, I think we can move the party back to its base principles, just like the squad did with 4 or 5 relatively unintelligent, loudmouth squad members. Instead, we've got an America First group team that's going to take the country in the right direction because we're smart. We're willing to call out people in our own party who are not acting like Republicans, which is a lot of them, and just, you know, do the same kind of thing, but, you know, in our seats rather than their seats.
Exactly. Because, you know, that's a really good point. They've, when you talk about the squad, a relatively small number of unknown, newly elected liberals have basically taken over and transformed the Democratic Party, and
they've gotten them to sign on to, you know, full communism.
Yeah,
and almost had them ready to pound the gavel for, you know, what was it going to be, five to ten trillion in reality their Build Back Better bill that was free, and the news out today is that basically it's dead. So got to hold our breath till the third of January, but. After the 3rd of January, we should throw a party for Joe Manchin.
Yeah, I was going to say, think about this, Joe Manchin. He is the most important human being in our country.
Yeah.
Right?
It's true.
Joe
How Manchin. Frightening is that? One guy.
Right. And that is not any opinion on Joe Manchin. It's just a comment on where he is in terms of our country and how poorly we are governed. We are governed so poorly. And I know we've all said this, but it's true. If you pick 537 names out of a hat of American citizens of majority age, they would do a better job in Washington than the 537 people we have sitting there today. Because there'd be no corruption. Corruption is, I believe, at the heart of every problem we've got.
Yeah, you can't ever rule out just stupidity too. I mean, there's that because in some of this, you know, they tell them, well, it's free because we're going to do this and this and this and this, and I mean, there are still people that think that, you know, giving everybody everything is going to create wealth. I don't know any ideology that can take root without some stupidity thrown in.
Well,
like
that
you know,
I
on
think,
the topic like that.
Yeah, and I think so many of them have never really, well, first of all, a lot of them have never really had a real job, but they've never owned a business. They've never run a business. They don't know what it takes to keep the doors open. And if they did, they'd know that a lot of this stuff they're handing down is totally detrimental to small business.
Well, and let's not forget my favorite topic. The problem is people keep electing them.
Yeah.
So really, right. We point the finger at members of Congress like they elect each other. But in reality, when you go back to their district, California is a great example in a terrifying way. I mean, we finally get rid of Barbara Boxer, you know, widely held as the dumbest member of the U.S. Senate. And we pick Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
And then we offload her for Alex Padilla. It's like, what the heck?
Yeah. So the best of the best.
So there's, I mean, we actually, you know, we actually got rid of somebody that we wanted to get rid of. And what'd we do? We doubled down and lowered the bar. And we're seeing that in our legislature, our state legislature as well. Same thing is happening.
Yeah, it really is our fault. It's unfortunate, but. So this is something we wrestle with every day. How do we deal with low-information voters?
Mm-hmm.
And social media and mass media have absolutely worked to allow the Democrats and swamp rhino Republicans to take advantage of that low-information because they're not educating like they used to back in the day. And social media did for a while, and the minute they figured out that we could use social media to call out candidates who were saying one thing in Cincinnati in the morning, another thing in Columbus at lunch, and another thing in Cleveland in the evening, sharing on social media because that was pervasive, and the Enquirer in Cincinnati was only read by Cincinnatians for the most part, and the Dispatch here in Columbus and the Plain Dealer in Cleveland. The minute they started to see, I believe, that we had this kind of underground media, you know, independent media.
Sure.
They shut that down as fast as they could because now you can't lie your way into a candidate. You can't lie your way into getting legislation passed that's good for, you know, big corporate America but bad for citizens. And it seems like every time we find a way as conservatives to communicate, they want to shut it down. I mean, think about what they're doing to parents and school boards. Right?
Yeah.
They want to use the Patriot Act and make us domestic terrorists.
It's kind of great though, because don't you look back, we've got to be all of us around the same age. If you were going to school in the high school in the 70s and Bill was and I was, you know, yep. We're all around the same age. And in that time, if you think about that, we created a giant crop of Republicans because Jimmy Carter was such a dummy. And he had such bad policies. And who was sitting with the family car in the gas line? It was the teenagers. I remember that vividly. Yep. And it was like, you've got to be kidding me. I never forgot it. That always informed my political information.
You just brought up a really bad memory for me because I remember those days, and I remember how mad I was that I had to wait in line for gas, and when I finally got to the pump and filled up my car, it was $12, and that was outrageous. back then. Now it's $100. I mean, what is going on?
Right.
You know?
People ask me, you know, you're an assistant candidate, you've never run for office before, you know, how informed are you on these issues? And I'm like, listen, I've been, like many people, I've been like a policy nerd, a political nerd for a long time. And when I think back to when it started, it was those Jimmy Carter.
Yeah.
That was it. People say, what's your furthest memory back? And I'm like, well, I do remember those dumb buttons that, you know, win with inflation now. But I was fairly young at that time. The whole lines of Jimmy Carter, I'm thinking to myself, we are a country, you know, because we used to teach history and geography back then.
Oh, yeah.
So kids knew where the resources were. And I'm like, we've got oil. That was when the Alaska oil pipeline was being built and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
So we've got an oil industry in Alaska that's massive. We've got an oil industry in Texas that's massive. And when I get to college in Ohio, I realize that Ohio has tremendous, you know, fossil fuel resources. And I'm like, how in the world can a country like ours be sitting here without enough gas? Just made no sense to me. And it still makes no sense to me when we run into these shortages, but we now know that Ross Perot was right.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That giant sucking sound.
But isn't it great that that skewed our view going forward for a long time? And so as screwed up as things are, it still makes me happy thinking about how many of our people are being basically imprinted forever by the stupid policies these guys are doing, because whenever they get in charge, they get into power, they go too far, they go too fast, and they blow themselves up, pretty much in that order.
No thought. Yeah, no critical thinking, just ideological blind thinking, and that's exactly what they do. It's all everything we're living through right now are self-inflicted wounds, and you can go to the virus.
Yeah. So
if we weren't funding things like gain-of-function research, perhaps that wouldn't have happened, right? So we can't say for sure, but it sure seems to me like we shot ourselves in the foot here, and I would like to think we'd be smart enough, but I don't know these days to keep from doing it again.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, but you look at what happened to the Democratic Party at the hands of the squad. They have blown up, and you know, in fairness, same thing happened in 2010 when the Tea Party Republicans came in. They wouldn't accept right. anything but perfection, so we didn't get that much done back then. And the squad, with their hard left ideological stuff, they blocked tons of stuff that the, I'll call them the regular Democrats, not that there's all that many of them left, but that they wanted, and they couldn't get anything done because it wasn't far enough left for the other guys, and now they're watching all their stuff go into the dumpster. So we just have to keep from doing that again, you know, swinging it so far the other way that actually we become incredibly ineffective as well.
Let me ask the two of you a question.
Yeah.
Do you really think, do you think that Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer want to be as far left as they are today?
No, I don't.
Yeah. No, I
so
don't.
So think about that.
They have no choice.
I'm just going to call them four or five dummies took those people who were supposed to be sophisticated career politicians and absolutely snookered them. Just shut them down.
Well, you know, that's
incredible.
Funny. They made the classic mistake. It was like they got all enamored with young people. Oh, look, we must have young people. Look, we have them. We have the young people. Aren't they magical? And then it was like, oh, God, our young people are crazy.
And now, very educated.
And now we fluffed them up and put them on the front of the thing. And now what are we going to tell everybody?
Right.
Oops, our young people are nutballs.
Right. Yeah, that, I mean, what else could they say? Really?
Yeah. Whoops.
I mean, and laugh. But what more could they say? They can't say, well, they were just a little misguided. No,
yeah.
A lot.
Well, actually, what they're saying is, you know, I'm busy. I'm not going to run again.
Yeah, but
I basically don't want to get hit by the swinging door.
You still have to remember they're getting reelected by the same people. You know, I mean, that's...
I would have put money that Ocasio-Cortez could not have gotten reelected. I'm like, okay, once maybe, but that's just, that was just an accident.
Yeah. So there's plenty of people out there that believe in a lot of this stuff.
Well, Hank Johnson's still in office. The guy who thought Guam was going to tip over. So.
Oh, dear Lord.
Yeah. If you put too many troops on Guam, he asked the admiral in a hearing. Remember that? Aren't you concerned that the island may be destabilized? It's like, oh, my God, is he saying it might tip over? Yeah, they have elected him, what, 5-6 more times? In Atlanta. Yeah. So the parents in Ohio, Mark, are the parents in Ohio like, okay, that's it. Now we're going to play now. We've been busy, but we're not busy now.
Yeah.
Oh, shoot.
And I don't know if you're going to, like, the CRT thing and schools and all the rest. So the answer there is yes. And that's another one of these things we're working on in our Leave Ohio Better Than We Found It. It's been fixing education.
Oh, I like that. Leave Ohio Better Than We Found It. You're like the Cub Scouts and the Girl Scouts before all the social engineering took them out in the olden days.
Do they exist anymore?
Yeah. They're there, anymore? But, you know, now they're environmentalists. And, yeah, anyway.
Got
to take a really, really quick break, and we'll come right back with you, okay? And I'm sorry we'll let you talk the whole rest of the way. This is just so much fun to chitter-chatter about stuff we all think about all week. So we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Good job, Bill.
No, thanks.
They said there'll be snow at Christmas. They said there'll be peace on earth. But instead it just kept on raining. Veil of tears for the virgin birth. I remember one Christmas morning, a winter's light and the distant choir, the peal of a bell on that Christmas tree smell, and eyes full of tinsel and fire. I wish you a hopeful Christmas. I wish you a brave new year. All anguish, pain, and sadness, leave your heart and let your road be clear. They said there'd be snow at Christmas. They said there'd be peace on earth. Hallelujah, Noel, be hail and all hell. The Christmas we get, we deserve.
Huh. It's kind of a political Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. The Christmas we get, we deserve.
Yeah.
Yikes. Kind of like our representatives.
Ouch.
Yeah, we should make better choices there. So, Mark, what besides everything, what have we not covered that you would like to tell people?
I would tell people that I think one of the main points I would like to be able to get across and educate people on is something you mentioned, that we will continue to get the same performance in Washington and in Columbus if we keep hiring the same type of people. If we keep hiring career politicians that are pushed down on us by the party, who have demonstrated to us, have told us who they are, right, with their actions and their words, yet we believe the last act they put on, the last act of the play, they managed to convince us that all the rest of the things we saw were just figments of our imagination. We elect them, and then they stop acting when they get to Washington, and we're surprised. And so I would say the facades, the caricatures, the actors, we have got to stop electing them.
Yeah.
And I, for example, am getting told I'm too contentious, I'm too provocative because I'm calling this stuff out. But we need some fighters in Washington. And the only thing those people are fighting for there right now, most of them, is improving their net worth. They don't give a rip about their states or their country. I mean, we've seen that. And I'm talking both sides of the aisle. It just angers me and frustrates me.
Yeah, and you know, a hot tip for people, you know, a lot of times people say, well, I don't ever have a chance to meet any of these people. How do I know if they're good or bad? Because all I know is, you know, what I get in the mail and what I hear in the media and whatnot. You know, I learned quite a while back that if you go and meet their staff, meet their campaign people, make it a point to go to their campaign headquarters, make a phone call. I mean, you just do it from home if you're not near one of their headquarters. Go to, you know, go to their website, make a phone call, see if they're nice. Do they call you back? Are they nice? Because most people hire people like themselves.
Right.
It's a really good way to get a little sneak preview into who this person would be as a boss.
In every event, I say, here's my personal cell number, 614-499-0599. Call me. And I get very few calls.
Isn't that funny?
614-499-0599. You want to understand who I am and what I'm about, I'll talk to you personally. But I do get very few calls. It's not, people think you're going to put your number out there and, oh my gosh, you're going to be swamped. Low information voters are a problem for us. We've got to get people more engaged. That's something where we work on diligently. Bring a friend to a meeting. Get a friend to listen to your show, right? Your listeners should be trying to get other people to listen to your show. We have got to do this virally. I don't see any other way because it's the mainstream media is not going to help us. Social media shuts us down. It's going to have to be person-to-person connection in a network of human beings, and we're going to have to all focus on getting ourselves educated.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think particularly with social media, they're calling the shots. I mean, they have got the money and the means to put whatever message they want out there over and over and over again, and the low-information voters are soaking it up. And this is what we get, and it's exactly what they wanted. And you're right. Yep. I think it's going to take person to person communication to offset what they're doing to this country. And plus, I think, and I don't know how you feel about this, but I think these social media outlets, and we all know who they are, they need to be regulated. They're not. They're not regulated like everybody else.
Yeah, they're allowed. They're allowed a lot of latitude that you wouldn't get elsewhere. You can't sue them and all
that. That has to change.
Yeah, and that was a special exemption given to them in Section 230 of the Federal Communication Act. I've got a 21-point policy card. People can go to my website, markthenumber4ohio.com/policy. Again, that's markthenumber4ohio.com/policy. On it, we talk about social media and free speech. And my policy I would drive for in Washington would be this. Social media companies can make a choice. They can waive their exemption under Section 230 and be sued by people like us who find what they do to us to be tortious. Or they can be regulated like a utility, right? Look at utilities. What cell phone supplier could come to you, Bill, and say, you know, Bill, we're taking your phone back because we don't like some of the stuff you're writing about or talking about. We don't like your politics, so we're taking your phone back. Or, Aaron, we're going to shut off your gas because, you know, we hear that you're a conservative Republican, right?
Yep, you're in there forwarding memes about Joe Biden.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
There's so many.
Yeah, right? So that would be my solution. There are plenty of others, right? But that one doesn't require much legislation. That's a couple pages, hopefully. And it doesn't require any more, thank goodness, regulation.
Right.
We've got 175,000 pages of regulation, most of them conflicting with regulations from the same department, right? So Center for Medicare Services has its own regulations conflicting. So you have a problem and you're talking, they're like, oh, I don't know. You know, I don't know what this means. This is just, we've gotten to the point of idiocracy. We're past idiocracy, if you've seen that movie.
I don't know. I go to a lot of Brondo meetings. I do attend many, many meetings regarding Brondo. And if you haven't seen Idiocracy, actually, it has become, it's actually, you used to watch it as a comedy, but now we watch it as a documentary. It's terrifying.
I like that, yeah.
Yeah, the guy who made the movie, he put that out in a tweet, like, I think it was seriously like 4 or 5 years ago. It was a while ago. And he said, you know, I made this movie for fun. I had no idea that it was going to be a documentary in the future. It's like, well, I think that actually the reproductive part at the very, very beginning, that's starting to mirror a lot of what we're seeing.
Oh my goodness, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It's crazy. And you know, I guess there might be people, I should have said this at the beginning, there might be people who are thinking, you know, why are you guys having a Senate candidate? I'm from Ohio. It's like, hey, I got a hot tip for you. There are people running all over the country, and every person who's running, every person we talk to gives you an idea of what you might ask the person who lives near you if you don't live in Ohio.
Correct.
Still useful.
And I would say that what I said before about needing a caucus of people who are American First conservative Republicans who are citizen candidates who aren't wrapped up in this career politician nonsense, you know, you've got to go find them around the country. And even if you're in California or you're in Ohio, you've got to back them. You need to talk about them with people who are in their state, who are your relatives, your friends, your business contacts, but you also need to send them some money. I don't care if it's $5. You've got to show them some support because the party is fighting us, every one of us, because our party is part of this codependent cesspool of corruption. We have got to have an absolutely definitive change in the Republican Party to get back to conservative principles, get out of this thought that we've got to be nice and bipartisan and work with the other side. Every time we've done that in the past 50 years, we've gotten screwed.
Yeah.
We need to pull
some of it. We have to. I mean, you have some of it that depending on the numbers, you really do wind up having to do that. But we seem to have lost the ability and we've actually done some shows on it for why there's no communication across the aisle. They used to do, they used to have a lot of trips and stuff together. And when they cut the budget hard in like 2010, I think it was, they cut out all that kind of stuff. So the only time these people ever see each other is in a committee meeting or something like that where it's contentious. They don't know each other. And I guess that's something that if you were going to push would be find out who some of these people are. I mean, the Joe Manchins of the world. I mean, that guy's been a great ally. I'm sure a lot of our guys have been talking to him, I would hope. I know they try to get him to switch over.
I think as a leader, like I was a CEO for a long time, and you've only got a limited amount of time in your day to get things done. And you've got to have great discernment about who to spend time with and who not. So while I agree with you that relationships make this thing go, having a relationship with a fool doesn't do you any good.
Yeah, no, I'm not suggesting you have to be friends with everyone, but you should at least go figure out who you can work with, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you don't have to be...
There aren't that many of them. I don't think. That's the problem. I mean, there might be if we see a sea change in the 2022 election. But, I mean, who would you list as the people to go talk to in D.C.? I'm going to bet you can only come up with like 10 people.
Well, it's kind of interesting because most of the people that are good people that are there working, doing the right thing, are not people you're going to hear about. They're not the guys that are going to be on the 6 o'clock news. And they're also the people who are not prolific fundraisers. You know, we have a lot of people throw the baby out with the bathwater. If you're in office, you must be corrupt, horrible, and greedy. And it's like, well, you know, it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. If we keep saying that, that's who we'll keep getting. So we might want to figure out.
Yeah, because there's obviously good ones out there. And
might want to figure out who they are first,
You don't make it easy for smart and good people to run for office if once they get there, they're grouped in with all the knuckleheads that are in there. Because there are some good ones, and I think there's some decent folks on both sides. But that being said, you're correct. On the liberal side, I can't think of very darn many that – yeah. I think I could have a conversation with.
Joe's a big hero today. We'll stick with Joe.
Yeah, well, that's about it.
Go, Joe. Yeah,
I've got to tell you, I didn't think I would ever say this, but Kristen Sinema's, she's very interesting.
Yeah, you know what? That's true. That's another one. She's messed up their plans, too. And you know, you can't mess up their plans too much.
I didn't like Tulsi Gabbard's politics.
No, but she was a nice lady and smart.
Thinker.
Yeah.
A critical thinker. And she would have a debate with you, I believe, rather than an argument.
Right. And she wasn't one to be like all tossing names and being a lunatic either.
Yeah.
Hey, Mark, we've hit the end of the rope here.
Gosh.
Dang, we should have done 2 hours. We could have talked forever. If you want to come on again, you guys get a hold of us and we'll do some more as you go down the campaign trail.
We'll do that. Yeah, you guys are awesome. Thanks so much for having me on. Every little bit of earned media, no matter where it is in the country, helps us.
Awesome. Mark 4, the number 4, Ohio.com is his website.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Bye, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
Win. Good afternoon and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. Today is December 19th, 2021, so there will be
sleigh bells right around the corner.
No, Christmas music.
Mm.
Come on.
Damn it.
Come on, Bill.
All right, sorry.
Follow along.
Yeah.
All right, so Bill knows all about the sponsor. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name
Over
is Bill.
Over to you, Bill.
Yeah, my name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor is Pape Machinery.
Ta-da.
They do everything John Deere. They have tractors, mowers, box scrapers, backhoes, you name it, they got it. Give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226. And they're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, just up the road from where we're broadcasting. So go up and see them. And
if it's snowing out, you go right to the part where the freeway is going to stop and look to your right.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Right on the line?
Right there.
Right there. Right on the line. They probably paid extra for that.
Yeah, so they can have all the trucks parked in front of their store.
Yeah, that must be it.
Must be it.
Or you can catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da.
Yeah.
So this hour, we are chatting. We're switching gears now. We were talking about a Senate campaign in Ohio the first hour, and this hour we're going to kind of stay a little bit on the politics, but title is Bernie Sanders' Deceptive Infrastructure Bill and Your Healthcare. Yeah, two things I don't ever want to hear
always
together.
Going after the healthcare.
Bernie Sanders and my healthcare.
They keep making it better.
You should be terrified.
Yeah.
The nice part is the Build Back Better bill. Try that all at once.
It's DED.
It's dead. Hopefully. Don't throw a party until the 3rd of January, but it's looking good for its demise. So we have Dr. Kathleen Brown with us this year. This hour. I guess this hour might feel like a year. Sorry, Dr. Brown.
It's been a year.
She's all click. Forget these people. She practiced dermatology for 21 years in Oregon and founded the Oregon Coast Dermatology in 2011 as an alternative to a broken healthcare system. It's too bad she couldn't fix everything else in Oregon because that's a long list. Same too with California. And unfortunately, she didn't come and fix it in California after that. She and her husband live in Montana. They escaped and they run Montana Dermatology. But she wrote this terrific article called Reject Senator Sanders' Deceptive Infrastructure Bill and or Infrastructure Plan. And we have we posted that online for you at wethepeopleradio.us along with the archives of today's shows, both hours. They will be on there later this afternoon. So, Dr. Brown, how's the world in Montana?
Great. It's snowy. We want that.
Nice. You could probably you probably have a little bit more freedom there than you did in the land of Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's heading in a better direction with Oregon. They're not taking care of that beautiful state as it deserves, as the people deserve.
No, they're not. And it's funny because we in California
there.
Used to look at Oregon and go, oh, man, what a bunch of nut jobs. But unfortunately, California is the nut jobs now. I mean, we far surpass pretty much all the states with wacky legislation, and our politics have gone completely sideways.
Don't count Kate Brown out, though. She's still trying.
No, okay.
Come up with some other bad stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know anybody who likes her, but
yeah, isn't that interesting? I think they're all lying. You know, they must all vote for her, and then they. You know,
yeah, somebody,
I didn't,
somebody votes for her.
I didn't vote for her.
Yeah, no.
Nope, wasn't me.
Uh-uh.
So kind of peel your article apart for those people who haven't read it or, you know, just are listening to you for the first time.
Okay, so it was published in mid-September, so it's been about 3 months and some things have changed, of course. They've changed the bill, and you know, I've been looking at parts of the bill. It's a very long bill. I've looked at the healthcare parts of it, but you know, they called it infrastructure. It's just like they call everything healthcare.
Yeah.
Everything's pertaining to health. Everything's infrastructure because you know it's a very old term of central planning. They're trying to run things from on high because they know better. And you know, the good things that have happened in healthcare over the years are not due to government planning, and that's where it's always very hard for people to separate out what are the effects. And you know, there's a belief that government can make healthcare better, but when you look at the history, I think mostly what government has done is interfered with healthcare and then take credit for anything good that's happened. So you know, what I wrote in the bill has to do with, you know, here this bill that's supposed to be infrastructure, in addition to infrastructure, has massive effects on healthcare and healthcare funding, and it's not debated openly like
I don't think anybody was even talking about that. And
right.
And so I guess for anybody who thinks, well, I don't need to listen to this now if the bill's dead, you should absolutely listen because these guys have never come up with a bad idea that they didn't bring back.
Oh yeah.
So.
Yeah, they really, really want. There's a lot of people who really want to nationalize healthcare, and they have various different schemes and ways to do that, but. Obamacare, at least, whatever you want to call it, Affordable Care Act, was openly debated, and it didn't go well. You know, they got it passed, but just barely. And the debates were, they weren't smooth, put it that way. So here they're trying to sneak all this stuff in there here. That's the biggest point of my bill, is that is not debated openly.
Yeah, there's a reason for that, and they know it. They know that if it was debated openly, it'd be a tough go. So let's mm-hmm. sneak it in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
I'm not a huge fan of employer-based healthcare either, although, you know, that's here, and a lot of people like their plans, their insurance plans through their employer. I'm not a huge fan of that either, but it's incredibly regulated, and, you know, people are finding ways around these difficult regulations to actually do something good for people, but, you know, every time they, quote, innovate, they make it harder to go around.
Well, the idea that we're trapped inside our state lines, and you know, there are a variety of other things that you have to get a one size fits all. That was the big drawback with Obamacare. Mm-hmm. The first thing you noticed was your price went up because now you were paying for maternity care and you were a single man. You had to pay everything. Everybody had a one size fits all policy, and that doesn't.
Yeah.
It really doesn't work. I mean, remember when we used to, back in the olden days, and we used to say, okay, I want high deductible, I want, you know, depending on what your situation was, you could make all those choices.
Yes. Yes, and there's a myth that this is free market in the commercial health insurance, and it isn't. It isn't anything close to a free market. There are little bits of free market in healthcare, and they do very, very well, but... you know, you can't buy the insurance policy that you would like. And, you know, my husband and I, we don't buy commercial insurance. We're in that group that Obamacare was targeted, other than we make more money. So we're not subsidized. But even then, it's not a great, these are not great insurance plans. They're not what you would pick if you were spending your own money.
Yeah. If you, I guess there are two ways we could look at this. What are they doing that's bad, or what should they be doing that's good? I'm not sure which way you want to educate people.
Well, I think one of the things they could do that would be good would be to stick to the promises that they already made. A lot of them are kind of impossible promises, and then they go back on them, like, oh, we will never price medical care. When Medicare started, we will never price it. We will never control it. You know, forget about that. But
what do you mean by that?
So, well, they price health care. They price Medicare. And Medicare and Medicaid are, you know, half of the health care spending, the safety net in our country. Half of it is already paid for through government. And they price it in various different ways. There's all these hidden agreements. There's no free market pricing mechanism like in the rest of the market. You know, if your grocery store suddenly charges you four times as much for milk as everybody else, you're going elsewhere. And you can't do that with medical care, partly because they won't tell you the price. This whole
move
towards transparency is hard because there's all these hidden deals, and there's a reason they don't want to be transparent. The only price they can tell you is their so-called standard price, which is higher than any of their secret deals.
Hmm.
Yeah, kind of funny.
Yeah, who benefits from this? So if somebody who's listening, I'm always listening with these skeptical, you know, mm-hmm. I always want to make sure the skeptical people get what they need. So people go, well, that's just crazy. Why would anybody do that and make it messed up on purpose? Why would they do that?
Ki bono, I think you said, who benefits? Ki bono, I think that's a legal phrase. All the middlemen, all the people. I shouldn't say middlemen, middle people.
Yeah,
the people.
We can still
who
say middlemen. We don't.
We haven't
moved on from that. Middle. We know what middlemen are.
Middle people. The who benefits are all the people in the middle who keep selling these solutions that really only work for them. Again, if you're buying for yourself, you don't want all that because you don't believe it. It's mostly garbage, people in the middle. And but they're promising, oh, we can fix it, oh, we can fix it, and they never do. And so that's mm-hmm. who benefits, all the people in the middle, in between you and healthcare.
So sure.
Okay. Right. Well, I'm not really sure why the government's involved in health care at all. I mean, that's not what they do. It's not where their expertise is.
Well, they run the VA.
Well, that's true, and they do a great job there. I stand corrected.
Yeah.
Not.
And you know, for people who use it a little bit or who are there infrequently, if it's not their only thing, if it's not their only option. Mm-hmm. But, boy, if you have serious medical, ongoing medical issues, you know, annoying things like diabetes, that kind of thing, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to be a VA patient.
Yes.
You know, the appointment times take a long time. You sometimes have to drive a distance. You're not supposed to have to, but you do. Mm-hmm. They will cover this, but not that. And you wind up having to fight about a lot of it over and over and over again.
Yeah. Yes, true. And I think one of the biggest downsides of the VA is waste. I mean, any government program, they tend to waste a lot of money. If you still have a choice, you know, people will choose to use the VA or not. If you are stuck and you don't have any other choice, you may choose it for that reason. But I had a VA clinic years ago when I was a second-year medical resident. I picked the VA. We had a couple choices. And, I had patients who were my patients. I was their primary care doctor for a year.
Uh-huh.
And they would pick and choose. They would go see their private rheumatologist, and they'd come and get their MRI of their low back done at the VA, but they'd have to wait. And so they had choices, and they would, you know, use me basically to get the expensive things done that were covered by the VA. And then they go to their doctor they trusted, their specialist doctor outside the VA. But they had a choice. But even then, it's wasteful, all of that. But if it's your only choice, some of them are okay. Some of them are, you know, every VA is a little different.
Yeah.
But not having the choice is a problem.
Well, and with the shortage, another, you know, thing we haven't talked about with the Obamacare changes, you had a lot of physicians who got out of the business. So then we started in with the primary care shortage, but everything in that Obamacare model is predicated on primary care. That's your first stop to get to everything. You've got to go to primary care. And we got rid of all the GPs and basically told kids who were thinking about medical school that, you know, being a GP sucks and you shouldn't do it and it'll cost you a ton of money. At least that's what my niece
heard. A little bright spot there is direct primary care paid directly by the patient, and my husband and I and our two daughters have that. And one of the four of us has conventional job-related insurance but still has direct primary care. And, you know, that's something that some government officials are looking at. Can we kind of incorporate that? You know, you could kill a good thing.
Exactly. Yeah. I'd like to see the government stay out of that. I think there's a lot of direct care programs out there that are affordable. They cover probably 90% of the needs that people have in medical care or for medical care. The government gets involved in that, and it you're right. It could just mess up a good thing.
Yeah, there's a little slippery slope there. Sometimes employers pay it for it, and recently having LinkedIn discussions on if that's a good thing or not. I mean, it's a thing to be considered that the there's not complete alignment. And I think it's best when it's one-to-one, the patient pays.
Mm-hmm.
But, better is good, better is good. So,
yeah.
With our tax preference for employer-paid health care, sometimes that makes sense.
Yeah, because my doctor is always – he doesn't belong to any of the insurance plans, never did, even before all this. So I pay him, and then he will bill my insurance, which is great, and they reimburse me whatever they're going to pay, and that's kind of the way it goes. But that gives him a lot more latitude than a lot of physicians who are kind of hamstrung by all the policy that comes along with being part of some of these big plans. We've got to take a quick break. We're going to come right back with you, Dr. Brown. And I want to hear more about this practice and how you changed it up in Oregon and then also in Montana, because you guys are doing some clever things. You are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. And our guest is Dr. Kathleen Brown. We'll be right back.
Dot US.
I've heard it in songs, I've read it in Luke, I believe in my heart, it's the gospel truth. But we'll never know just what it was like to be a part of that scene the first Christmas night. The big star was shining, angels were smiling, wise men came from afar. Who would have dreamed the King of all kings would lay on some hay in a barn? Just some old farmland with a savior in the hands of a sweet young innocent girl. When heaven came down to earth, it must have been out of this world.
Forgot how quiet the Christmas music is. We usually play things that are very snappy. The music's very quiet today. So give us a little snapshot on what you guys did to innovate there in Oregon and then again in Montana.
Okay. So I was in a group practice that I liked. I was there for 13 years, and when ACA passed, you know, it was just getting harder and harder to practice the way I saw fit already. It was really tough. I was in an underserved area. And my husband had his own business, and we owned a small commercial building where his business was, and we renovated, and I opened Oregon Coast Dermatology, which I closed in 2019 in order to move. I would have been happy to help someone else take it over, but in my time frame, I didn't, you know, find the right person. But what we did, and it wouldn't be innovative in any other part of the economy, was I billed services by time, since it's a service, and I posted it online and in my lobby and in my exam room. And I charged by time, and I dished all the third party, all the insurance. Opted out of Medicare. You're actually allowed to be outside of Medicare and charge Medicare patients if they agree to it. You know, they have plenty of other options. Got out of Medicaid, but in Oregon, they have this weird rationing. It's overt rationing by diagnosis. So most of my dermatology diagnoses were not covered. So they say the state cares about you. They do not care about people with a lot of different dermatology. And that's 25% of the state. So of the people in the state. So I just opened this, and we had tons of doctors say that will never work. Why would anyone come to you? And I was busy immediately. Yeah. And I had really too much business. I did raise prices because I started on the low side. I was still too busy. I never hit a point where I had a fall off due to price. And most of my patients were not affluent. People came from hours away, some of them because they found this online because they wanted a price transparent practice. So, you know, that's all sorts of different people. That would be people with high deductibles, people with no insurance, people with mistrust for the, quote, system. A lot of Medicare patients who are basically paying double. If they have Medicare B and a supplement already, they're not reimbursed for that. They're not allowed to submit a claim to Medicare. They might get that 20% of it from their supplement, but it's kind of not worth that. So it suited a lot of people. We ended up being so busy, we opened once a week a walk-in. It was the same price, but it was first come, first served. so that people didn't have to wait months. It was another option. And I also had, once a month, I had a limited fee, $10 or $20, depending on a shorter or longer visit. And surprisingly, some people who, and that was just based on me, if I, and I did a budget for that, my charitable budget, based on time slots, you know, not based on, I mean, anybody could say, well, I need cheaper.
Sure.
But, you know, and it wasn't available on a first visit. I didn't advertise it. But for people who really needed help, you know, I was able to do that. And I didn't even fill it up. There weren't that many people who really didn't have another option. So that's how we structured it. And super busy. Just
now, do you have any, do you get pushback from the state? I mean, is there any repercussion for, you know, kind of coloring outside the lines like that? Or are you allowed to do that?
You know, the people I got pushback from were commercial insurance. Even though people are allowed to submit a claim, unlike your doctor, billing strictly by time, I didn't bill by CPT codes, which are a monopoly by the AMA to the federal government back since 1983. There were lots of ways to bill and bundle and price services. So it was the commercial insurers, and there was a little tiny line in the Oregon administrative law that said under ambulatory, you know, the devil is in the details, under ambulatory surgery that you have to provide codes. They didn't say what kind of codes. So it was in the law. So I had patients of mine who would submit a claim to their insurance company. They said, oh, she didn't bill by codes. That's illegal. And so they sent me a letter from their counsel threatening to report me to the medical board. The medical board is supposed to supervise medical practice, not billing. But eventually I got that little line taken out. And so I would put codes on for people. I charged them for doing the extra work of converting it because I did the work. It was definitely extra work. Didn't promise I follow all the billing rules because they're minute, intricate rules. But I would apply a best fit code, and then they could submit to their insurance company who could, you know, reimburse it according to whatever rules they had. Hmm. So that's who I ran into with the insurance company, but they're very regulated.
Interesting. And if you were in, did it make a difference the type of practice that you were in? I mean, would that be something, I guess, my real question is, could you do that in any type of practice?
Yes. Yes, you could.
See? Okay.
Yes. And in Oregon, at least for a while, kind of the path was cleared because of all that effort. I had two bills in the legislature that didn't get out of committee. But I ended up finding a way to do this and kind of compromise, really. You know, I didn't want to spend my time doing coding. But I did it rather than delegating. That was my choice. But there was a path to do that would work, and other people could maybe find some other ways through. This is the challenge of more regulation. So, you know, how do you find a way to still serve people and not run afoul of these laws that you don't even know they're there? They're so intricate. If you look at Build Back Better, and people should, I look on govtrack.us, and you can just kind of glance at it under Build Back Better. They're intricate. There's all these rules. Our society is being run by intricate rules that you don't even know are there. And then, you know, the rules that are on physicians, and they just a lot of times want to serve patients, but they also want a nice paycheck. They're an employee, so they end up playing a game that doesn't serve the patients as well as it should.
Well, I was just going to say, when you get into Build Back Better thing and you start looking at it, I know we can't read the mind of the people who wrote it and all that, but, I mean, is this all just a smoke and mirror thing? We're just going to slide this in here? Because
it's
that was never talked about.
Single payer, which they do want single payer, and I think the single payer thing is, you know, I get into a little psychology here. I'm a Thomas Sowell fan, too, but, you know, the progressivism, capital P, is the label I might put on it. It's the idea that experts, elites, can plan our society better than we can plan it ourselves. And so you can see that when you look. I'm looking at section 137602. All these, that's pertaining to healthcare, 137601. They're these individual things, intricate rules. And so you're constrained by those. You're not outlawed from doing things overtly, because we Americans wouldn't go for that. But, you know, there's tons and tons of strings attached. And as they control more of the dollar flow, you know, the strings are stronger. You know, people, these young doctors today with all this huge debt coming out of medical school, they're going to go into some giant organization that can play the game for them. And I don't think it serves patients best. It's an idea that the experts can plan this out and make it fair. And so my Thomas Sowell thing is, it's a constrained vision. Mine is a constrained vision. No, they can't. No, they really can't do that. There are limits on what they can plan, and most of the knowledge of what each of us needs is held individually by each of us. That's why it should be one-to-one service. You know, what are your particular needs? You can't plan somebody's healthcare by algorithm unless it's just the basics, the very basics.
Yeah, again, if you go in once or twice a year, you have no ongoing medical problems. You don't need somebody to do any, you know, like my doctor's a good detective. So I'll go in and, you know, I'll tell him something and he goes, oh, that's because of da 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 da. It's like things that I wouldn't really have thought of.
Yeah.
But he takes the time.
Good doctor.
And he has the time. Because
good
he's
doctor.
Not, yeah, not running a big, you know, cattle herding thing, you know, just running people through.
Do you think young doctors that come out of medical school, got huge debt, do they have any idea about these regulations? I'm sure they all go to medical school and want someday to be, you know, have their own practice. And are they given any of this up front that, you know, once you're out on your own, you have to comply with these mountains of regulations and what they are?
I would say no. I mean, they're disillusioned, but very few of them anymore start out wanting to go into their own practice. I did it later in life. I joined a large group initially, had small children. My husband was working, but, and, you know, these structures are so hard to navigate. The way to go into direct practice now is for the patient. But no, and I'll be controversial and say I think they're indoctrinated in a point of view that is not focused strictly on what is best for each patient.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a collectivist point of view, and they feel that that is morally superior, and they've been taught that, and they believe it. And I'm not bad-mouthing them. I just think that's the way they've, you know, that's the culture that they've been brought in, up in.
Well, and don't,
that,
don't most
you know,
of them...
it's their job to achieve equity.
Right.
Go ahead.
Don't, as a doctor, when you get out of medical school... don't you have to intern at a hospital or someplace and kind of get your feet wet before you can before you can actually hang a shingle?
Yes, you need either 1 or 2 years of internship even to get a license after medical school, but most people have a minimum of 3 years of residency, including internship. I had 6 after 4 years of medical school.
And is that experience, does that kind of clue you in to, you know, what's down the road as far as regulations and what you can and can't do?
Not so much the regulations. Usually you're working, at least traditionally, in a hospital, but a lot of it is based on many, many mentors. I was very lucky. I rotated to 4 different hospitals, so you get a lot of different. But, you know, the views expressed by your mentors, the people that you look up to, affect you.
Sure.
And so there's just not that many people in private practice. It's very much corporate these days. And,
right.
You know, it's kind of funny because people on the left who are kind of supposedly anti-corporate, it's all giant corporate now.
They're kind of not. They've really sort of, I don't know if they did it on purpose, but they've really bought into the bigger is better type of deal, I think, because it goes with their government view. Bigger government.
Yeah.
And for those people who have never read anything about technocracy, I would encourage you to look up that term. There's a guy named Patrick Wood, wrote a terrific book. It's not really all that big. It's called Technocracy Rising. And he documents how back at the turn of the century, that they believed that having the technocrats run everything. So these would be the Dr. Fauci's of the world, having them in charge of everything and getting rid of all these, you know, having us dummies, electing more dummies to represent us. No, we can't have that. We need to have the bureaucrats were the smart ones, and they should run everything.
Excess faith in experts. But we learned that in medical school. Experts are wrong a lot of the time. That's in the history of medicine. If people read it, you know, we learn over time. And then we look back and we go, oh, wow, that was kind of stupid what we did 50 years ago. But, you know, we didn't live 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm. No.
That's the nature of scientific progress, is that, you know, you do things that you think are right at the time, and later on they turn out not to be right. And that's just an excess. I mean, I think it's great to have experts, but let's have a little healthy respect for how often they can turn out to be wrong.
Yeah, they thought that, I was kind of laughed, the story that he tells. He said they filled the Hollywood Bowl at one point. They had that many people who were down for technocracy. And they had like little cards, membership cards that they carried, and people were really into it. And the reason, I think, besides the fact that the idea had hit its limit at that time, but the thing that really blew them up was they got uniforms. And it was right around the time of the war, and everybody was like, oh, my God, it's the brown shirts.
Mm.
They got these little onesie outfits and were marching around, and they were going to be the technocrats, and everybody's like, I don't think so. But here they come again. They've never, ever, ever let go of that idea. But look at what's happened with Fauci and Birx and all these people that got us into this whole pandemic mess and killing all of our businesses. And okay, we have to take a really quick break, but. Yeah, I want to know your thought on that, if you're good with it, when we come back. Because
mm-hmm.
that's, I don't know, it's much on everyone's mind, and it just seems to have gone completely into bizarro land these days. Our guest is Dr. Kathleen Brown, and you are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Thank you, Aaron.
Sure, Bill.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can. Doctor, my I am wise to leave them open for so long.
Kind of fitting for the virus.
Yeah.
We left our eyes open just a little too long. We figured out what they were up to. As a doctor, what do you think of all that, Dr. Brown?
With COVID?
Yeah. Just how it's all been. I mean, you know, obviously hindsight's terrific and all that, but just the idea that we had, you know, these big bureaucrats on their pedestal dictating to everybody what they would do, what they should do. And they're
we're seeing it all now because of social media and 24-hour news cycle and all that. You know, the polio vaccine had some real missteps early on, and you know, they did kill people with polio vaccine when they didn't inactivate it properly. They didn't know what they were doing. Science takes time. And it also, a pandemic, a virus like this, exposes our vulnerability, which is very uncomfortable. You know, we think we're safe, and we're not. Things can come along, whether it's, you know, a meteor, whatever, Yellowstone volcano. There's things that can happen. And so again, the psychology part of it, I think people want that security. That it's almost childlike. You want a parent to tell you what to do. And the truth of it is that it's an evolving process, and people will make mistakes as they figure it out. Thank goodness there's people working on it. But what we need is honesty and not politics. So this whole, I believe the science, that is the most unscientific statement you could ever make. The heart of science.
I like the science is settled. That's still my favorite.
Yeah. Well, it's never settled, of course. I think the sun does, the earth does revolve around the sun. I could be wrong. But it's never settled. That's the process of it, is questioning and skepticism. And then, you know, what do you believe? What you should believe is what you see with your own eyes, you hear with your own ears, and which is why a lot of modern mainstream medicine has had the success it's had in some areas. We've seen results, you know, in certain areas. In mm-hmm. other areas, not so much. But, you know, people should trust themselves more to believe what makes sense to them and not rely too much on people who know less than they say they do.
Well, same too when your doctor says that, you know, you would be unwise to get the shot or wear a mask or whatever the thing is. And you're not allowed to make those decisions with your doctor because it's being made for you back in Washington, D.C., or for us, like
yes.
in Sacramento.
And
somebody's making
that
decision.
And with your doctor, it's called an opinion, you know, a second opinion. You get an opinion from your doctor, as it should be.
That's why you go.
Yeah.
But it's opinion. It's not, you know, your doctor may say, I feel this is safe for you. It's always opinion.
Sure. But, like, if you're, like, for me, I have crummy lungs, and so I don't have a lot of capacity. So for me to, I mean, I could suffocate all by myself. I don't need to put something over my face. So wearing a mask for me is a non-starter. So I had him write me a note. So,
and you trust your doctor because they know you and care about you and have knowledge specific to you.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Well, I had him write me a note way back in early 2020 because I thought, you know, I bet these people are going to go hog wild on their mask deal and they're going to try to suffocate me. Sure enough, they did. So I had him write me a note, like on a prescription pad, that said that due to health conditions that I was not able to wear a mask. And it's kind of like, you know, we spit on your note from your doctor.
Depending on what state, what city, what community you're in, whether that holds any sway or not.
Well, here...
it would be good.
Yeah, here where we are in far northern California, everybody, you know, they basically spit on the mandate, not the note, which is good. They kind of fell for the mandate for a while, and then it was like, all right, this is silly. We're going to stop doing that. And if people want to wear their mask, great. You know, they want to get their shot, great. But there's not a lot of appetite for... making everybody hop to probably very similar to where you are. Are they pretty?
Yes. Isn't it interesting how the dictionary definition of anti-vaxxer has changed?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're basically, I think actually they jumped right over anti-vax and went right straight to heretic. And I think if they could burn us at the stake, I do believe there are some of these people who are that rabid about the whole thing, they feel like it's our fault.
Well, know? it's like the reports that came out here. Gosh, I think it was last week I read in some hospital, I don't know if it was New York or wherever, but they weren't going to treat people in the hospital for COVID if they hadn't been vaccinated. They're going to leave in the hallway and, you know, hope for the best. You can't do that. I mean, that's just...
There's a lot of that going around.
Yeah, it's just nuts. I mean, you take an oath to help people as a doctor, and I think you have to leave so much of that opinion out of it, and let the patient make, you know, their own choice. And if they get sick, then you know they get sick. But you can't.
I did my internship during the peak of AIDS, real AIDS, people coming in not knowing what they had and you know, dying, that hospital admission because they were so far gone. And, you know, we got needle stick injuries. And I'm sure there were people who discriminated against people in healthcare, but I really didn't see it where I was. I was in Norfolk, Virginia. I didn't really see it. We treated people very, very well who had AIDS mm-hmm. and who had behaviors that other people might, you know, frown upon, but they were patients in each and every one of them. And that's what I saw amongst the people who are my mentors, my residents. So it's funny, people want to preach at us now about how you treat people and equity and all that. I'm like, you know, that's a really a little condescending to those who lived through that, which was virtually considered a uniformly fatal disease. And yeah. you know, we were using sharp objects.
Yeah, no kidding.
Blood stick injury, you know, blood injuries. And thankfully I didn't catch it, but there were people who did and died of it. Doctors
yeah.
who died of it.
Wow.
Treating people with AIDS.
And we didn't really know much about it for quite a while.
No, it was incredibly scary.
But it's funny, even with that, you didn't see the government intervention and mandates, and you know, because that was a very serious ailment, and it was
that didn't
was
have everywhere. A 99.7% survival rate like we're dealing with now.
Yeah, yeah. So I think
it was the opposite. It was. Virtually always fatal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did, you know, I find it stunning that all the people who worked through this last year, not, you know, in the medical profession and didn't really know what we were up against or how that was going to work out, and they went to work, the doctors and the nurses and all the people who worked in the hospitals and all that. And now this year, you better get our shot or you're fired because we don't need you that much.
Now, it's despicable.
Yeah, now we're getting rid of all these people that were our heroes, supposedly have gone right straight to zeros if they don't sign up for the government shot. And you mm-hmm. think, wow, these people already survived an entire year being inundated with people, a lot more people than we have now, and they're not allowed to make their own choice.
Yes, and a lot of them had it and are immune.
Mm-hmm.
Not by way of shot.
Yeah, any thoughts on that? Why that is such, that's more heresy, that if you've had it, you already have immunity, you don't need the shot?
Yeah, because they don't recognize that.
It doesn't make any scientific sense at all, and yet I'm hearing other doctors who say this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
It doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Oh. No, lots of them. It's driven by politics.
Yeah. Well, it's just like the treatments. If you get it with the ivermectin and
that's right, you can't have that either.
Yeah, I mean there's drugs out there that have been proven effective, but yet you still have doctors that will not prescribe it.
Well, and if they will, then the pharmacy won't fill it.
Yeah, and that's even.
Yeah, we're in the evolving phase, and you know, like with AIDS. We don't have a vaccine. We have treatment. And that took years of doctors treating individual people and observing and doing the studies over time. And, you know, these things that are reasonably safe between a doctor and a patient, they should be able to make that decision.
Sure.
And people will disagree still on whether any of those specific ones are useful. I mean, they should. They should have this. We're evolving right now. We're learning.
Right.
And
right.
So, no, they shouldn't be banned. That's well within a doctor's prescribing capabilities to use things off-label. That's been legal, like, forever. It's not up to the FDA what you prescribe. What the FDA is whether the drug is available.
Right. Well, they've always had, depending on what the ailment is, I mean, well, pretty much any ailment out there, they're always developing treatments for it. You don't see that with this. It's like, oh, no treatment. The only treatment is the vaccine.
You got to go home and wait till you're super sick and then come back.
Yeah.
When have we ever done that? Told people that unless they're, you know, basically, oh, yep, you have it, but go home and wait till you're super sick. That seems crazy to me, too.
I think that makes sense. I think the thing to realize is that doctors as well as other people in medical, I always remind my husband, who's not a doctor, who's a business person, doctors are humans, and we're social creatures, and, you know, we like to form groups, and right now there's this very, very strong pull to be in one group or another group, even amongst doctors. It's it's kind of sad, but it's also just super human, very human
right.
to do that. And you know, where do doctors get their information? We don't always think about that. It kind of comes to us from various different sources. But it's taught a lot of times like, well, this is what we think. But it's always, this is what we think now. And, you know, in 10 years, the experts will think something different. And so we're in the midst of this time where knowledge is evolving. And we should allow doctors to doctor and to make the best judgment they can in the current situation and not be constrained.
Absolutely.
Well, it was funny because my doctor told me, he goes, well, if you get the virus, because I went in and I said, okay, because got lung issues. So it's like, okay, if I wind up with this, I've got a pretty limited window for us to make decisions. So, you know, let's make a plan. And he said, well, I think you should have whatever this is. He goes, I'm going to prescribe it, have it on hand. It will be all ready. He goes, you know, anybody who's been through medical school in the last 25 years would say that I was crazy, but we used to use this a lot. It's good for virus, not good for bacteria. So it'll work really well for this, but no one's using it because they've grown up in a time period where they were all told, oh, nope, this is bad, you can't do it.
Immunoglobulin?
No, it's a dexamethasone or something.
Steroid. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he said you just have to make sure you have the virus. It's bad if you have bacteria. Won't work and it could be dangerous, he said. But they've been told in the last 25 years that it's dangerous for everything, don't use it. And he said there's a lot of that kind of thing that's kind of gone one size fits all.
Well, you made a great point about off-label prescriptions. I think anybody that's been to a doctor for any length of time has experienced that, where a doctor will prescribe something for whatever and you know, it's off-label, but they're allowed to do it.
Yeah, and you know from experience how that would work. Dr. Brown, we have hit the time, the end of our time capsule here with you.
Thank you so much.
It went really fast.
Thank you.
We really appreciate you coming on, and we appreciate you keeping people smart on the Build Back Better bill, and if it does return, we want an update from you. Thank you so much.
Delete it.
There you go. Thanks for coming on.
Merry Christmas and enjoy Montana.
You too.
Dr. Kathleen Brown, and you are listening to We the People. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us. Red tape to keep the truth clear.